3 o'clock here on WEEI Afternoons on a scorcher. Does this qualify as a scorcher today?
It's a scorcher.
It's hot out there.
It is very, very hot. I've already done my workout.
Brag. Outside?
Inside, but no air condition. That's the best way to train.
What a hardo.
If you train in an air-conditioned environment, shame on you. You're not getting the full benefits of that workout. That's all.
Couldn't agree with you more.
Well, let me one-up you on your hardo-ness before we get to the three-point stance.
Oh, boy.
I did go for a jog.
That's a double-O boy from us, Dan Ball.
I went for a jog in a hoodie this morning.
Oh.
Yeah, but mainly because my hoodies are my – I wear bright colors because drivers are terrible.
Yeah.
So I have, like, a bright yellow, bright orange, like – The see me, please don't hit me hoodies.
I mean, you are small. It is hard to see you.
Hurtful.
Ad hominem attack.
Yeah, that wasn't even like a creative.
Prompted by anything. Just
being real. Just a couple guys being real. Yeah. You know, you're worried about your, you know.
Not just a ton of nuance to that one. It was just straight to the point, which I appreciate.
I don't blame you for dressing in brights.
Yeah,
right. So what are you saying, Ted? That he looks like the size of one of those caution children at play signs?
Maybe.
I do have a sweatshirt that actually is exactly that color. Saying. But I have always also thought of, do you think I could pull this off if a car's going to hit me? Like you see it in the movies, they jump, so you kind of like hit the hood and then roll over the back. You think I could pull that off?
I think so, depending on just how fast the car is going. I think you could.
Okay. Because my escape strategy. Not try to get out of the way. I think it's safer to try to jump up and make it sort of a Barry Sanders-like glancing blow or something.
Yeah. Do you go oncoming traffic so that you can see the cars coming?
Yes.
Or do you run with your back to the cars coming from behind?
Oncoming, and that I believe that's the law. I believe that's what you're supposed to do is see the traffic in front of you. If you're on wheels, you go with traffic. If you're on foot, you go against traffic.
I did not know that
was
believe
the law. You know what the other law no one knows in Massachusetts because they passed it like 4 months ago? You're supposed to be minimum of 4 feet away from the walker or the biker or whoever. Any pedestrian you pass, they're supposed to be at least 4 feet. Nobody adheres to that law. People are definitely closer than 4 feet because I've reached out and whacked mirrors and my arms are not 4 feet long. Anyway, Stiz.
Well, it must be even worse for you, Andy, because objects in the mirror appear smaller than they seem. So you're invisible practically.
Do the burn dance. Sick burn dance. I love when Stiz gets involved because I'm pretty sure he's the shortest guy on the show. I think I'm taller than Stiz.
I don't know about that.
I think I am.
I don't know.
And Marcus Jones, we're going to go in a room and we're going to measure each other because I enjoyed that interview yesterday as well. Yes, yes. We're going to measure each other's height, Fitzy. I don't know what you're thinking about. Keep it clean here.
Why'd you have to go in a room for it?
Yeah, that's the thing. Why'd you have to go in a room?
All right, it's 3 o'clock. Enough with the height jokes. Enough bullying of Andy. It's time for the three-point stance.
319!
319!
319!
Yeah,
there you go!
It's the three-point stance.
I'm going to count to three.
Tatum puts up a three. Bam!
Easy as one, two, three.
Pastrnak, a hat trick, and a 4-3 Boston lead.
Three.
And it is gone! A three-run homer, and the game is tied!
On WEEI Afternoons.
So the 7-8-1 has you all beat in this game of bullying humor. Andy, all you have to do is stand still, and the car will drive right over. Well played. Well played. Dan Ball, the floor is yours.
All right, time for today's three-point stance here on WEEI Afternoons, brought to you by Jeffrey Glassman, Injury Lawyers, Boston's go-to injury attorney for over 30 years. If you've been hurt in a car or work accident or were mistaken for a cone on the road, you got to get Glassman. Call all 717-677-7777. 3 o'clock here on WEEI Afternoons, three hosts, each of which will present their stances on the biggest stories in the world of sports today. Our order, Andy Hart, Nick Fitzy-Stevens, Ted Johnson, Andy, you'll lead us off. You get 60 seconds for your opening stance, and you survived a good round of bullying by EEI Afternoons. Are you ready?
The cone is ready.
Okay, go ahead.
So when do I actually get worried about the Patriots passing attack? Because I, you know me, I'm reactionary, recency bias. I liked what I saw from the running backs. I like what I'm thinking I'm going to see from the defense. But as Fitzy noted, I'm starting to stack up days of concern with the passing attack. It's great to see Drake May pull the ball down and run for 10 yards and slide. It's great to see him run off the left side for a touchdown. I don't believe this team can go where we want it to go and be as good as it can be leaning on just the running backs and Drake May's legs. They need to have a competent passing attack. Fitzy, you noted it yesterday, a glorified walkthrough. They're pulling the ball down in a glorified walkthrough. There were Tim Tebow-esque plays where it's like, nobody's helping, nobody's, oh, I got to dance around here. There is no consistent execution to a competent passing attack right now down in Foxborough. Whether that's the complex nature of the Josh McDaniels scheme, whether that's really the wide receivers aren't that good and we need to talk about just how bad this bottom portion of the league wide receiver crew is, whether it's Drake May and what his instincts tell him to do. I don't know what it is, but it doesn't look great. So I'm asking the floor, when do I get worried about the passing attack?
Apparently
middle
now.
Of September.
Middle of September, so I give it like a 2-3 games. Is that how we get into the season? Because I legit, and this is the common, I think anyone you hear, Tom Curran, Mike Giardi, Paul Perillo, people that are down there watching, you're like, I don't want to react. I don't want to overreact to summer practice and workouts. And then they're like, but this doesn't look great. This doesn't look consistent and effective in the passing game. And I think we all had these concerns with Josh, right? Young quarterback, different style. Josh, complex scheme. What is it going to be? How long is it going to take him to get acclimated? And I think we're in the midst of that right now. Ted, so when do I worry?
You start worrying now.
Oh, right now.
That's when you start worrying. You start worrying right now. I think this is a big week. It's a big week going to Minnesota. So we'll, I think we'll have a better kind of handle on where we are after this week. But I think the worrying should start right now.
And this is going to be a tough week because all these stories you hear, Garrett Bradbury started this story when he was with Minnesota. He said, yeah, I remember teams used to come in here and they weren't really ready for what Flores was going to throw at him and that defense. And so I'm already worried about the passing attack. What are they going to do?
I know. Well, it'll be interesting. I can't wait. But here's the thing. Even if they crap the bed, and they probably will, it's probably not going to look good. It's, you know what? They will be going up against the Commanders, going against the Vikings, two excellent teams from last year. It's going to make them better. Even if they look bad, they will learn from their mistakes. They will get better, and it will serve them well to start the season that they went up against these opponents and maybe didn't look good. They can, you know, they need to learn from these joint practices, and they will. And so, even if it doesn't look bad to me, there's still really good work being done.
I want to agree with that. My only hesitation is that theory implies that they can do the job. And if the offensive line just isn't good and the receivers just aren't good, I'm not sure they can, you know what I mean? Sure, they can learn from it. But if they're not good enough to go out there and get open and catch the football, if you're making route mistakes, adjustment mistakes, if it's sort of physical with what you're doing, or Will Campbell's a guard and Jared Wilson's a center and, well, we're playing them in the wrong spots this year, they're not that good. That would be my only pushback. Because in theory, I want to – because you keep hearing coaches. Josh says it. We might play some audio later. Like, Drake's not an error repeater. This guy, Will Campbell's not an error repeater. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's good. That means when they F up, they won't do it again.
I heard he is, though, actually. Because I heard Will Campbell gave up another sack with the T stunt that they gave up in the game.
I will say, Will Campbell was getting chewed out early in practice yesterday. Because there were limited fans in attendance, so you could hear a little bit more. And he was being aggressively coached.
Let me tell you something about the passing game, okay, with Josh McDaniels. You know, it might not look good, but I tell you what, when the games come, he will manage the crap out of the passing game. It will be quick little swing routes, ball out fast where the running back doesn't have to check for blitzes. They get free releases, balls out fast. Dink and dunk to death is what he'll do, and that will be the kind of way in which they introduce their passing game. It's not going to be down the field, intermediate passes, that kind of thing. It's going to be dink and dunk, horizontal, just to get them lathered up and feeling good about completing the ball. And that is what's going to kind of be the passing game, at least until they feel more comfortable passing downfield.
And that's what's going to prevent me from worrying a lot, because I do have a lot of faith in Josh. If this were Alex Van Pelt and I didn't have a track record and a history and all of that to go by, I would be a lot more worried. But part of me is like, Josh McDaniels will find a way. He seems to have always found a way, especially as a coordinator. Forget the head coach, but I'm talking about as a coordinator. He always finds a way. He takes his chicken, whatever kind of chicken you present him, he's going to make some chicken salad out of it. So, okay, I'm not going to worry just yet. Fitzy told me mid-September, so I get a little over a month before I start to worry.
This is when you're supposed to experiment and flirt and find out exactly what you have in terms of your playmakers, what kind of line depth you have. Look at what a rotation of auditioners they have over at left guard. Three or four people have played the spot so far. I hazard a guess that there'll be maybe one or two others that'll probably get a shot at it before they even line up Sunday, September 7th against their Raiders. And they still have to work the wires come cutdown day, probably for cornerback depth, D-line depth, and more offensive linemen. So,
hey, Fitzy, if they just started Efton Chisholm every single snap, the passing game would be they'd have no problem with the passing
Ted,
game.
Ted, I was starting to get a little jealous that you hadn't taken a shot at me just yet.
Yeah,
so thank you for bringing me into the unnecessary verbal kumite, sir.
I mean, I don't know what – I mean, Efton Chisholm is
you tried out 22 Efton Chisholms, and I will tell you what, buddy.
Mm-hmm.
Fire up those duck boats.
0-17 is in play.
Fire up those duck boats.
Did you see how giddy the coaches were after he had his couple of his catches, one of his touchdowns?
Oh, yeah.
Because they were enjoying the fact that they, you know, Efton Chisholm, to the coaches, it's like they think they create Efton Chisholm.
Right.
Like Efton Chisholm is, you know, it's not his ability. It's, ooh, did you see how we got him open on that rub route?
Yep.
Okay. And
yep.
So you could see all the sheepish looks at each other after he scored that touchdown as if to say, hey, we're good coaches, aren't we? That's what's going to happen with Efton Chisholm. Is it's going to be one of these things where these coaches are going to love that they can scheme him open.
Fitzy.
Yeah, but wasn't the debate also always like Julian Edelman wasn't really great? It was Tom Brady that helped make him great. So, like, isn't this another one of those chicken or the egg debates then?
Well, then you mix in the scheme. Where historically,
it's a good scheme for a guy.
Whoever you put in that role, from Troy Brown to Wes Welker to Julian Edelman to Danny Amendola, these guys have all succeeded. So it's like, well, the next guy will succeed too, which I always thought was a little disrespectful to the, as you said, the actual player. Like the guy who goes out there and just because he's short and white, and I'm not talking from experience here, he might have some ability. Oh, maybe he has quick feet. He gets open quickly. He is a tough son of a gun who gets hit by the stupid Ted Johnson coming over the middle and gets up and does it again and does it again and keeps going back
kind
out
of guy
there.
I bet you wears Hey Dudes. I bet you Efton
Damn
Chisholm
right.
wears
wow.
Hey Dudes, man.
I'm on Team Chisholm,
this
then.
Is a full, this
sure,
is a
bro.
Full, this is a full-blown Johnson blitzkrieg today. Let's
yeah,
go.
Yeah, Ted's in a mood, and I kind of like it. I'm enjoying
yeah.
this.
Hey, does Efton Chisholm probably wears bright orange sweatshirts when he goes jogging with his
with
dad?
Hey Dudes.
All right, Dad.
Okay. Nick Fitzy Stevens, are you ready?
Whatever I say, it's going to be wrong, so why not?
That is usually the case on days like today, but you get 60 seconds either way. Go ahead.
All right, so your Boston Red Sox currently are 10th in Major League Baseball with 146 home runs as a team. Over their past four games where they went 1-3, they're averaging 5.5 runs a game. So it doesn't sound like that they're currently suffering from any sort of power shortage or inability to score runs. And yet, at the same time, I'd be hard-pressed, and I'm sure you, the Red Sox fans and Fenway faithful, would be hard-pressed to figure out or say who exactly is the big bopper in this lineup. Who's the power hitter? Who's the certain home run threat? There really isn't one in particular, but I'm going to ask during this home stretch, as they have a quarter of the season remaining, for one certain somebody who is excellent with the bat in his hands, both especially in terms of plate discipline, getting on base, as well as just making contact with high exit velocity, and that would be one Roman Anthony. He has in 180 at bats on the season, but 1, 2, 3 home runs. And in my 3-point stance today, I'm calling for Roman Anthony, who's excellent at making contact and excellent at getting on base, to try to maybe alter that swing just a little bit and give the Red Sox a little extra punch, pop, and power in their lineup, because the way they're pitching these days, I think down the stretch they're going to need it.
So you know who agrees with you, Fitzy?
Who's that?
The Boston Red Sox, because I've heard multiple analysts, Lou Maloney and Middlebrooks, I think both were on this bandwagon a couple weeks ago, that they've been working with Roman Anthony to get a little launch angle. They love his at-bats. We know that. They love the way he works at-bats. They love the way he walks, all
He's
that.
He's been called the Efton Chisholm of the Red Sox lineup.
And then I don't think so. And then they love the exit velocity on ground balls. There's a lot of ground balls where he's hitting it hard, but he's hitting it down into the dirt. And they have been working with him, which is interesting for a team that we kind of asked them to go the other way with a lot of players that were doing too much launch angle early in the year. But they've definitely been working with him because they believe that a slight adjustment, and you're talking about a guy that can be a power hitter. Now, the one thing I would say, the only thing I would caution Fitzy is like, okay, so we want him to bat leadoff and get on base and walk, and now we want him to be a power hitter. Like, careful, how much can we put on this poor kid? I know he's good. I know he's the next Ted Williams based on the numbers, but can we not try to put too much on Roman Anthony's shoulders? Dan Ball.
Well, just to kind of show what the adjustment would need to be. So right now he's fourth on the Red Sox among all hitters in ground ball percentage. Over 50% of the hits that he has are on the ground.
Yep.
Where a guy like Bregman, for example, is at 36%. Even Duran is just over 40. So it's not a huge change, but it is a slight reduction of hitting the ball on the ground. And maybe it's just an organizational thing because Christian Campbell was ahead of him at over 50% as well.
Okay. So, but I also, like, it's also very early in his career, and it's like, how much do you want this? How good do you want him to be? This good isn't good enough. Now he needs to be great. He needs to add power. He needs to add home runs to carry
the
team.
Where else is it going
to
come from? Allow me to follow up with, where else do you guys think it'll come from?
Well, I don't know. I feel like in stretches of success for this team, I don't necessarily need the home runs. They'll come. You play at Fenway Park, you'll put some in the bleachers, I mean in the monster seats and all that. But
you're a rookie and you're leading off. Just get on base.
Right.
And why you know, I agree with you 100%. Why mess with his swing when he's getting on base? Yeah, he's not hitting the home runs like you'd want, but he's also in a role that doesn't really require him to do that.
And I don't know that we need it, Fitzy. Like, I feel like my mental image of this offense when it's at its best is a guy on second base doing the airplane celebration because he just had a double in the gap, right? He hit a line drive through the gap, boom, somebody scored, he's on second, and we almost play like station to station. I don't think there's anything wrong when you play at Fenway Park and you're built like this team is, just being a doubles baseball team. There's nothing wrong with that. Okay, so it takes two hits to score instead of one, but if you do it well, and I think at times they have done it well, I think that can kind of be their identity. So, you know, the Red Sox agree with you.
More doubles. The Sox may agree. Maybe some fans agree. Maybe many disagree. If they decide to become a more doubles-based team, then we'll raise more money to help defeat diabetes. So
perfect.
It's win-win.
Everybody wins. Love it when we come together with a plan here on WEEI Afternoons.
And now we win because it is time for Ted Johnson to present his three-point stance. Ted, are you ready?
I'm ready, bro.
All right, your 60 seconds begin right now.
Okay, big win. You talk about wins. Big win for John Gruden. I don't know if you guys have noticed John Gruden lately, but he is like the... he's got this perpetual kind of look like the cat that ate the canary. And in the last few months, I mean, you haven't seen him for years, ever since he got fired from his job there as the Raiders coach, because of the leaked emails that were kind of put out there when the NFL investigated the workplace inappropriate kind of things going on there with the Washington Commanders back in the day. They find all these emails, the correspondence between John Gruden and, at the time, Bruce Allen, who was the team president of the Commanders, and it all hell breaks loose, and we find out John Gruden has thoughts on a lot of different things. These leaked emails, John Gruden is suing the NFL. He started back in 2021. A big win for John Gruden yesterday. The Nevada Supreme Court ruled to block the case from going to arbitration. As a result, Gruden's case can proceed in public instead of going to arbitration. The NFL does not want this case to go to the public, and it's not going to. That's why John Gruden is so omnipresent. I swear, he's everywhere. Everywhere you look, there's John Gruden, because he knows this case is going to get settled out of court, and he is going to make a boatload of money, because the last thing the NFL wants is for people to know what goes on in the discovery and find out all their dirty little secrets. So John Gruden, he's going to get his revenge. It took him a while, but he is going to finally get his revenge, I think, on the NFL ultimately, and get a big payday, because the last thing the NFL wants is people, lawyers, making public what goes on behind closed doors. So that's why you're seeing John Gruden all over the place, because he knows that in a few years, he's going to be paid a lot of money.
Boatloads of money. His best friend right now is the D word, discovery, because there is no chance. You're right, Ted. There is no chance that the NFL is opening up its email servers and its text messages and that we're
what's in there?
stuff that they probably don't want anybody to know about.
The email, the correspondence between between John Gruden and Bruce Allen. They go on. It's like from 2010 to 2018. All these emails, thousands and thousands, and he had names for the commissioner and other. So You don't think, Roger, this is a personal thing?
And the irony is, emails got John Gruden in trouble, but the NFL's fear of their own emails is going to pay him, I don't even know, $100 million, $150 million,
but it's
huge number.
That's why owners don't want to call out owners, because there's dirt on everybody.
Right.
You want to
out
me?
We're all the same, right? I wouldn't want people reading my emails and my texts. I'm not sure what's in there, but I wouldn't. And I think
you're not even doing a group text chain the right way, unless if someone were to find it, you were going to get canceled as a person or personality.
It's just John Gruden, you haven't seen him for years, and then all of a sudden he's everywhere and more obnoxious than before.
You don't like John Gruden, do you?
You know what? I think it's a little bombastic, a little theatrical, you know, and over the top and inauthentic, and just doesn't really resonate with me and hit where it needs to hit.
Tell me what you really think. But he does. He doesn't
have you feeling all nicey, Ted Johnson.
He does one thing that I think is cool. He's gotten this shtick over at, he's at Barstool, right?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Where all the colleges send him these swag packages. So, like, hoodies, sneakers, shorts. Mm-hmm. I wish people would send me free hoodies.
Bill
and sneakers
Belichick
and shorts.
Sent him a nice
everybody
care
does.
Package. Yeah.
Yeah, he just got one from UMass.
Bill O'Brien, everybody has. He's
don't you guys like the Gruden QB camps, like when he used to do those? In the, I love watching him sit down and break down QB tape.
That was his best area, in my opinion. The rest of the stuff was stupid. He said some of the dumbest stuff as a color commentator when he was on ESPN or whatever
ESPN,
he was.
ESPN, yeah.
Like, I remember one game.
Monday
this
Night
is
Football.
My classic example. And Matthew Slater came in at wide receiver for the Patriots. And he goes, Slater, this guy's fast. When he comes in, he goes deep. And I'm like, does he even ever have a catch? When he comes in, he blocks. That's why they brought him in. He's a special teamer. So it was this superficial analysis. But when he sits down with a quarterback, you can see former quarterback coach, you know, what he looks for. I will say there's some value in that. But you're right, Ted. I did wonder how he rebounded so aggressively from where he had been. And I think you're right. I think he had an inkling of where his lawsuits were going. And
Just wait it out. If you're going to wait it out.
Sooner or later, there's going to be he's already got a ton of money because he got paid by the Raiders, by the Bucks, and then by the Raiders again, and now he's going to get paid by the NFL.
What was it? Knock on wood if you're with me.
It was a 10-year, $10 million a year.
Yeah, $100
million deal.
Yeah. Yep. He's going to get more than that in this settlement, I bet.
Oh, you might.
More than that.
You might.
Are you a blockhead?
Not a bad thing to be John Gruden right now. He's had his ups and downs, and there's some other things in those emails that we don't necessarily advocate for on WEEI Afternoons, but the guy's come out the other side, is going to make some money. Coming up, I'm very excited. Ted Johnson, we made you wait not one, not two, but 3 days to react to the Tom Brady statue. Just kidding. Also, the preseason opener, Drake May and company made some plays, made some mistakes. Things looked pretty good in the blowout of the Commanders. TED Talk. Ted Johnson's thoughts on that preseason opener up next here on WEEI Afternoons. But first, Dan Ball, give me what's trending. That was Josh McDaniels speaking with the media yesterday down at Gillette Stadium, where the Patriots were fresh off their Friday night victory over Washington. Football Talk on WEEI is presented by Paramount Plus. You can't count on much these days, but you can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus. Watch your local NFL game live every Sunday on CBS and Paramount Plus all season long. Visit ParamountPlus.com/NFL to get started today. So, Ted Johnson, that was Josh McDaniels talking about his most important player, pupil, whatever you want to call it. And that was his thoughts on the, I guess, fumble/sliding/ that fine line that Drake May walks at times on the field. Mm-hmm. And I'm guessing that is going to be one of the talking points in our TED Talk today.
It's time for a TED Talk.
There's a football player, that Ted Johnson. Yeah.
Smacked down. He hit a pothole that time in the form of Ted Johnson.
Stories from on and off the field from 3-time Super Bowl champion Ted Johnson.
Ted Johnson scrapes right into Jerome Bettis' face and puts him on his back.
This guy is going to be one of the best inside linebackers in football.
On WEEI Afternoons.
So if you don't mind, I'm going to ask you to lead off a little bit there before you get in. I know you got notebooks full of reactions to Friday night. But so there was good and bad from Drake May.
Yeah.
There were what seemed like well-thought-out, proper runs, including a slide on one of them after the first down that Josh McDaniels brought up.
Yeah, yep.
And then there was the, oh, crap, rolling left, going to get sacked. So you know what I'm going to try to do? Switch hands and throw the ball away, only it didn't happen.
He did the switch hands thing. He loves to switch the ball.
Yeah.
from one arm to the hand to the next. And when he's running out of, he did that last year, and as he's running out of bounds, so he takes the ball, they're pursuing from inside out, and so he takes the ball from his inside hand to his outside hand so that they can't strip it before he basically lays the ball out of bounds.
Yep.
It looks good when you're, you know, when it works like that, but when you're trying to, make, the perfect play, it kind of blew up in his face. Look, that was to me that was obviously a bad decision by just ball security was terrible there. But I had more of an issue with our left tackle than I did Drake May on that play.
Uh-oh, Will Campbell in the crosshairs. So, Ted, do talk.
So let me real quick before we get into the nitty gritty. So the three keys to success, you guys all had your three keys.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I won't quiz you on those. I'm assuming you still remember what yours were. Mine.
Sure.
Keys for success for the Patriots this year. Was they need to have a better third down offense.
Yep.
They need to improve their turnover ratio.
Yep.
And they need to, when it comes to the quarterback, you need to have a better touchdown to interception ratio.
Mm.
So let's just look how did they do in this game. The third down offense, 7 of 14, 50%.
Sounds good.
Good, baby.
Money, money, money.
That would be, I'll take that all day.
Okay.
50% would be a top five third down offense. So they were good on third down. Their turnover ratio, that one notwithstanding with Drake May, they were plus one. The Commanders turned it over twice. The Patriots did once. So it's a plus one, which is good. Zero touchdowns, passing touchdowns, and zero interceptions. So that's moot. But so that's just something I just wanted to kind of remind people of. Those are my three keys for success. The play that jumps out the most with me, and we've talked about it going in, is we have a rookie left tackle and a rookie left guard. And you ask me, what are teams going to do when they see those two guys lined up?
Feast.
They're going to feast. And what is the down in which they probably will feast the most?
I'm going to guess third.
Man, my man, you are smart.
Yeah,
smart.
Two for two.
So the Patriots, their first third and long situation, third and seven.
Yeah.
Okay, to start the game. They give up a strip sack because the left side of the line, the rookie left tackle and the rookie left guard, could not pass off a T stunt, an X stunt, and they got fooled by it. And so what happens is it's kind of hard to, if the left tackle passes off the outside guy that's crashing down to the left guard, and the left guard's got to now pick up the new guy and pass the guy that was over him to the left tackle. But the left tackle's got to make sure he doesn't turn his shoulders. It's always got to be parallel. His shoulders got to be parallel to the line of scrimmage. They weren't. Will turns in, and then the guy scrapes around and sacks the court. That is something teams are going to do all day against the Patriots. And if it's that left side that's we think is going to be two rookies starting, they're going to have to figure that out.
Is it safe to say that is Feast 101? I feel like a little TE stunt is not the most exotic of blitzes or games being played. That is sort of the base level one, right?
That is the base level one.
Yeah. So I'm not going to overreact to it. Does that fall under there's no bad plays, there's only good plays and plays you learn from? That's a play you learn from, right?
I think so. Oh, for sure.
Okay.
Yep, for sure. Time's a ticking. We only, we can't be learning this in 3 weeks, all right? So let's learn it now.
I thought you were yelling at me first. I didn't know you're talking to them. Will Campbell.
what you saw with Drake May pulling the ball down, I did not mind the touchdown. I think Although maybe Dan disagrees with me because he thought I couldn't see guys open. Maybe Dan saw it differently. The touchdown run he had where he scrambled, it was four-man rush, and it was a clearing of the parting of the seas.
Yes.
Go run it in.
And if I remember correctly, there was a four-man rush and three went to the left of center. That left only one guy on the side of the field that he ended up running to. I'll take my chances with that.
Yep. So we go, why isn't he throwing the ball? It's like, you know what? If there's four rushers, that means there's seven guys in pass coverage.
Yep.
And so it's kind of tough, small windows. So I don't mind him pulling down and running on that play. The run defense concerns me. They're playing a lot of three safeties.
Yeah.
A lot of three safeties. And I just look at these linemen and linebackers, and I go, oh boy. I think they're going to have a smart defense. I think it's going to be an active defense. I think the run defense is going to be an issue. Can we get off the field? This defense had issues getting off the field. It was one of the worst rush defenses, I think, in the league last year, and they couldn't get off the field. I just hope that that isn't an issue with this defense, because right now it almost looks like linebackers are the size of safeties and safeties are kind of the size of linebackers. And so are they going to be able to hold up in there? That's what I worry about against the run.
In a league where, Fitzy, that seems to matter again, because a few years ago it was like, oh, running backs don't matter, defenses are getting smaller. We've seen a little bit of a resurgence of the value of a powerful game tone setting running offense, right? Like Baltimore, Philly, those are teams that are looking to run the ball down your throat. So I'm with you, Ted and Fitzy. It seems like that could be an issue for this defense.
Yeah, like look at Green Bay, Josh Jacobs. Like that's, you know, everyone thinks of the hyper athletic Jordan Love and his arm talent, but same thing in Philadelphia as well. Saquon Barkley, Josh Jacobs. Isn't this what the NFL does every 5 or 6 years? It goes over, you know, 4 or 5 wide, so then people counter with big rushes. Then they decide once they guard that, then they switch back to a power running game.
Yep.
So we have seen the renaissance of the power running game. I think it's great for the NFL. I'm a little concerned that maybe the undersizing of the defense, Ted, could be a little bit of an issue if the Patriots do face a power rushing attack.
Yeah, it's going to be. So they're going to have to get off the field. Somehow, some way, or be the proverbial bend don't break like we were in 2001. You kind of like, yep, okay, you got us between the 20s, and then when we get to the red zone, we're the best red zone defense, and if you can't score, well, you can't win. So we'll see. Just a couple other things on Drake May. You guys saw the throw down the field, the fade to the right side of Matt Collins. He threw it out of bounds.
Yep.
Did you notice what the defense did on that play?
No, but you're going to tell me.
They started two safeties high, and then after the snap, they rotated a safety down and then single high safety. And so that opened up that opportunity to get the ball to Matt Collins. To me, that's going to be his best throw, is the fade down the right side. He didn't hit Matt Collins on it, but he made the right read. That was the right read is to go to that guy. Drake May is going to have to learn how to read defenses, just not only pre-snap, but post-snap, because they're going to rotate. They're going to show him one coverage before the snap and then rotate into something different. And so he did an excellent job of reading it. It just wasn't the best throw. I think you're going to see an athletic offense in the sense that there's going to be a lot of play action, a lot of misdirection. You saw a lot of toss cracks,
yep,
to the perimeter with Travion Henderson. You saw a lot of just boots, and you're going to see a lot of screens, misdirection because of how athletic the quarterbacks are. You're going to see an athletic offense because you saw the left tackle and left guard. They were pulling them a lot. So they have, yes, an athletic offensive lineman, athletic quarterback, and then to go with a running back, and then potentially, you know, some of their receivers, if Efton Chisholm is out there, there's a athletic piece, and I would say just kind of just there's some interesting pieces of this offense that I think are going to make it kind of more of a, I don't want to say explosive, but potentially to be a more explosive offense.
And especially with Josh and what you talked about, and we're going to take a quick TED Talk timeout here, but especially what Josh wants to do with short passing game, running backs involved with the passing game, screen game. We saw hints of the running backs being a central, yep, point. Those athletic offensive linemen, they can make a block out in space that can turn a little swing pass or something into a 40-yard play. So that's good for them.
One more thing about Drake May. He only completed 3 balls.
Yeah.
There were a lot of them were just quick little swing routes. Yeah. They were beautiful swing routes. You go, okay, he averaged like 3 yards per pass. You know what? He threw the ball in a place where the running back was moving forward as he caught it. He didn't have to stop and catch the ball behind on his back hip. He was actually, the momentum was where the ball was going. To me, that's a good sign.
It matters, yeah.
It matters.
Sometimes you think you take that for granted in the NFL, but you see running backs have to spin around, catch it behind them, lose their momentum, and then some guy like Ted Johnson catches them and tackles them.
That gives you enough time
to
get there.
Absolutely. 617-779-7937. Still reacting to Friday night, the Patriots preseason opener. Ted Johnson, I don't know if you've noticed, he's got a lot of good things, a lot of things he likes coming out of that game. TED Talk will continue next as we react to those Patriots successes in Gillette on Friday night. 617-779-7937. WEEI Afternoons, a little behind the scenes here. TED Talk does not stop during the break. Ted was teaching during the break to Dan Ball how to watch the game.
You want me to share with everyone?
Go ahead. What were you telling Dan?
So it's like, okay, what do you, when you're watching the football game, if say the Patriots are on defense, do you just watch the ball? Most people just watch the ball, right? Hmm. Ball snapped, the quarterback, watch the quarterback.
We're all ball watchers.
If you want, it's, there you go. If you just want to take it to another level, what I do on every single play is I watch how many rushers there are on defense. How many guys rush the ball? So if there's more times than not, it's usually like a four-man rush. I go, okay, it's four-man rush. It's not a blitz. They're not blitzing. And I know there's seven guys back in coverage. If it's five or more rushers, then I know it's a blitz and that someone is singled and there's going to be an opportunity to maybe make the ball's got to come out quicker, that kind of thing. So I watch – when I'm watching defense, the first thing I look at the snap of the ball, how many rushers I count, how many rushers yep. there are. And then that kind of gets my brain thinking, all right, they're blitzing, they're not blitzing. You know, how many guys are in coverage based on the rushers? Boom, boom, boom. So, because you can't see the rushers, I mean the guys in coverage.
Right.
But by counting the rushers, you know in your brain how many guys are back in coverage.
So there's a lesson Dan Ball just learned during the break.
Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely, 100%.
I want to know if teams are aggressive by blitzing or if they're not. And then it just leads to, once you kind of figure out, okay, they're not calling an aggressive game, then that tells you more information, and that's, you go from there.
All right, let's go back to TED Talk. What's next in the notebook?
Well, you know what? The thing that jumps out, which you want to see, it was a clean operation, right? Four penalties to the other team's, 13 penalties? Which was good, and you want to, that's what you want to see. So I liked seeing that. I thought Ben Woolridge did pretty good. I know I'm not going to get all worked up, but But we watched the games. We watched him out there, and he, I mean, nice little efficient game. I thought he was audibly. I thought he was getting. I just thought he had a command of the operation. Out there, which was impressive to me. So, and then the red zone offense. Last year they ranked 30th in red zone, only scoring on 46% of the red zone offense. I know it's a preseason game, but they were 5 of 6. So, if you can get that third down offense going like I want, and you get a good red zone offense like they did the other night, those are the two biggest situations that you know can help score points, and so they were excellent in those two categories. I know it's preseason, but you get my drift. So those are the main things. You know the run defense I'm a little bit skeptical of. The third down and seven stunt, get ready left side, young guys on third and five or more. When you got to do 5-step, 7-step dropbacks, those guys on the left side are going to really be tested. Clean operation. I'll say this: Kyle Duggar had a couple missed tackles.
Yeah,
it feels feast or famine with him. It's either it's a big hit or it's a wow. He just went off the diving board and doesn't even know where he's at when he lands. You know, kind of thing.
Absolutely. And if he can't tackle, well, we know he has issues in coverage. So if you're going to miss tackles, you're really sort of deteriorating your role. And we've seen it. He's been running with the backups, and people are starting to look at cap hits and. Could the team cut him? Could they trade him? What's his role going to be?
Never really understood that contract because I've never felt like he's taken ownership of this team. You're never. A second-round draft pick. You play a position that is a leadership position, and I've never really seen him leading. You know,
right. I think he's missed Devin McCourty a lot on and off the field. I think when you pair up Kyle Duggar with Devin McCourty, who's
did they
a
play
leader,
together?
For 1 year, I believe.
Okay.
I believe so. But that's what he needs to be paired with, the veteran leader, and I can just do my thing in the box, be a hitter, a tackler. Whereas here, you don't really have that. Maybe Jalen Hawkins can bring some of that to the table or the Woodson kid. But the Duggar thing is weird.
And they got safeties covering wide receivers a lot. I mean, they have three safeties out there.
Right.
So they're going to have to cover guys that they're not typically used to covering. And we know that Kyle's had issues covering just, you know, tight ends in this league.
Absolutely. 617-779-7937. If you want to continue to react to TED Talk, to Ted Johnson's thoughts on Friday Night Football at Gillette. Up next, we need to get to a couple ESPN rankings that came out over the last couple days. Dan Orlovsky, He loves Drake May, except when he needs to rank him in a bunch of categories where he doesn't seem to love Drake May as much. And then elsewhere on ESPN, they do their future power rankings. They love them some Drake May. ESPN rankings up next here on WEEI Afternoons.